the countdown. Do you know what the plan is on move-in day? Like, what time you'll go over there?
I know nothing.
In 2 days, Christine Curtis was scheduled to move into a homeless shelter. She would go from living on the streets of mid-city Los Angeles to living inside a brand new facility for women in Hollywood. Making this move would mean that for the first time in more than 7 years, Christine would have a place to live.
Gotta record that sound of the card opening, closing, make sure we got it. What does it say? You should read it.
Okay. The card says, "We wish you all the best in this new chapter of your life. Enjoy your new home. Yours always in friendship, Doreen and Tony."
Doreen and Tony were two of the many neighbors in Mid-City who had helped Christine survive her years on the streets. Regular people, not with any nonprofit or government agency, who had provided food, water, friendship. On the one hand, this move Christine was about to make seemed like the obvious and safe thing to do. She would have 3 meals a day, a shower, a roof to protect her from the LA sun. But it also meant leaving behind her friends and placing herself fully in the hands of a system she really didn't trust.
Well, I told a lot of people this would be the last time you'll see me, and they kind of look like almost in shock, like they don't quite get what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to be back. They don't get it.
You're listening to the fourth and final episode of Samaritans, Homecoming. I'm Anna Scott. When I started following Christine, I had this question. With hundreds of millions of new dollars coming to LA County to fight homelessness, why has the problem gotten worse? At the heart of it is LA's severe shortage of affordable housing. Don't get me wrong, there are plenty of things that the city and county could do better to get people indoors, as this series has explored. And for a long time, the local government didn't treat the situation on the streets as an emergency, which compounded the crisis. But even in a perfectly organized system, it's hard to solve homelessness without enough homes. In this episode, Christine looks into the abyss, the gaping hole at the center of LA's homeless services system, where the housing should be. And we'll talk about the consequences of that shortage. Move-in day, September 16th, the bus stop on Pico Boulevard. Christine had packed all her belongings into 4 bags. The rest of her things were stored a few blocks away in her best friend Kim's garage. Kim's sons had helped Christine move everything there.
I really want her to be able to go, not be worried. And I'll bring her food and whatever. And
yeah.
Look after, you know, make sure she's okay.
Do you feel encouraged? I know you've been frustrated with the pace of things.
I do, because things are going on and progressing. And the main thing is her health first.
Yeah.
So, yeah. This is the day she checks in. That's what we've been hearing the 16th. That's what we've been hearing the whole time.
But moving in started with a mix-up. At the bus stop that morning, Christine's outreach worker, Catalina Hinojosa, told us that Christine wouldn't be moving in that day after all, that she'd just be going to the shelter to fill out paperwork. When we told Christine about the change in plans, she decided not to bring all of her bags with her. She stashed a couple in an empty shopping cart and pushed it around the side of McDonald's. We all got in the van.
Okay, so good. You can tell me where to go. I can go down Fairfax first.
Go Fairfax, the fountain.
The shelter was in a part of Hollywood that Christine knew well. She grew up there. As we got closer, she pointed out businesses she recognized.
Oh, that nursery, that's been there forever and ever and ever and ever and ever.
They have herbs.
Oh, yeah.
There it is.
Long tree. Wow. How do you open this?
Oh.
Okay.
From the sidewalk out front, the shelter looked more like a library, a cute little one-story brick and glass library. And there's a reason for that. It was a library. The branch closed years ago, and the building sat vacant before being converted to the shelter. When Christine was a kid, she did her homework at that library, which was a big part of why she agreed to move there now.
Looks like it did.
Yep, exactly. Old trees, huh? They've been here forever. These trees have been here forever.
Hi.
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 How are you?
inside still looked like a library, too, except instead of bookshelves, the main area was full of beds, 30 of them, some stacked into bunks. Christine checked in, and then another change of plans. Catalina said Christine could move in that day after all.
Yeah, so she's going to stay today.
Christine needed to get the bags she left by McDonald's.
Yes, I'm going to take her back to Pico to go through her things, and then I'm bringing her back.
Outside again, waiting for Catalina to bring the van around, Christine showed me and Kim a list of shelter rules.
Curfews at 8 o'clock. That's okay.
And what else?
Oh, the usual stuff about not bringing in drugs and, you know, all that stuff. You know that.
Breakfast at 7:30, lunch at 12:30, dinner at 4:30. Early bird special.
Christine had seen that she would only have a little bit of storage space under her bed, so she wanted to go through her bags one more time and throw away anything unnecessary.
I can't wait to come visit you.
Catalina said she would give Christine an hour to sort her things. Kim said goodbye. She had to leave for an appointment.
Will you let me know what's going on afterwards?
I definitely will.
Okay. Have a good day.
Christine said she needed a drink.
First, I gotta have a beer. I'm sorry, but I need one bad.
Do what you gotta do.
She went to the 7-Eleven on the corner. We'd talked about her drinking before. It wasn't an everyday thing, but sometimes Christine leaned on alcohol more than she knew was healthy, especially under stress.
I could go to sleep right now.
Yeah.
This'll help a lot.
Yeah.
Do whatever you have to do, right? Home stretch. This is it. As long as if you just get through today, then everything should get a lot easier.
I really had no idea what I was talking about. I didn't know if it would get easier. I was just saying what I thought I would want to hear if I were in her shoes. And as you can tell, I wasn't talking like a fly-on-the-wall reporter. I'd started this project to document a system at work from the inside, and that was still the goal, except by this point, I also had a stake in the outcome. I cared about what happened to Christine. I wanted to see her go indoors. And while I'm talking about my role here, it's possible that being the subject of this story helped nudge Christine indoors. A spokesperson for the People Concern, the nonprofit Catalina works for, said my reporting did not open any special doors for Christine or speed anything up for her. But I think it's fair to say it increased pressure on the organizations involved to get Christine off the street. I can't say if that made a measurable difference in what happened, but my point is, I was never really just a fly on the wall.
No problem for you.
Catalina came back a little past noon.
So you're not gonna see her on this corner no more. So this is it? Get that other way. It's open.
This time I didn't ride with them. Christine would be busy moving in for real, and visitors weren't allowed in the main sleeping area.
All right, good luck, Christine.
See, this moment came. You know we're all gonna take care of her, right?
Yeah, and I'll see her in a couple days. I'm not going to be out of touch, but...
Now she can make me cry.
Okay, bye.
When that van pulled away, I was so relieved. For months, I'd been afraid of walking up to the bus stop and finding yellow caution tape around it. I was afraid Christine would die on the street. Now, whatever happened next, she'd avoided the worst possible outcome.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
The place Christine moved into last September was called Bridge Housing, which means like housing purgatory, a medium-term place to stay in between the streets and a permanent home. The city has opened about a dozen bridge housing facilities in the past couple of years, funded partly by those Measure H tax dollars. About a week after Christine moved in, I went to see how she was doing.
The food sucks. If I eat one more peanut butter, all they have for lunch is a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Every day. Day after day after day. Breakfast is not much better, neither is dinner, believe me. Oh, God. And they won't turn their lights out till like 9 or 10 at night. I toss and I turn till they turn those lights out. It's like, oh, and there's no air in there. They won't open a window. I can barely even breathe in there. They don't care.
She hadn't showered since arriving.
Well, I will. I've not been in the mood.
Partly because sharing a bathroom with nearly 30 other women made Christine uncomfortable. I asked her how she was spending her days.
I keep going up and sitting on the bus stop and going to the 7-Eleven and getting myself a beer.
And listening to her Walkman radio. You know that expression, wherever you go, there you are? Christine's daytime routine was exactly as it had been on Pico Boulevard. She said she had met with her social worker once and told her that she didn't like the shelter.
See, she's got that mental health agenda. Like, why? Why? What? Hello? I've been on the street for 7.5 years. What do you mean, why? I'm supposed to suddenly snap into place all of a sudden? And I had my routine every day. You know that. I mean, day after day after day, the same thing every day. I felt like it was a security in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Hopefully, this is a step in a process that makes you closer to ultimately finding real housing than you would be if you were still back down on Pico.
Well, that's true. I should look at it that way, but it's very difficult.
One reason it was hard for Christine to take the long view was she didn't know where she would go next or when. When these new shelters opened, the city expected people to stay in them no longer than a few months. But because of the affordable housing shortage, many have stayed twice as long or more. Christine remained at the facility in Hollywood through September, October, November, December. By the end of the year, she still didn't like it, but she was used to it. She spent as much time outside the building as possible, usually at the bus stop on Sunset Boulevard. And when she was inside, she kept mostly to herself.
And I believe I'm the oldest person there. Most people are pretty young that are in there.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they are.
Even though her life looked a lot like it had on Pico Boulevard, Christine was moving forward, and she knew it. Before moving into the shelter, she hadn't visited her mother, Lizzie, for almost a year, partly because she hadn't wanted to tell her mom she was still living on the street. But in January of this year, she finally went to see her. It was Lizzie's 96th birthday. Kim and I went with Christine to the nursing home where Lizzie lives. I couldn't record inside, but when we walked into the room, Lizzie was sleeping.
Frankly, she has deteriorated a little bit, but it's been, you know, how long it's been.
After Lizzie opened her eyes, it took her a minute to recognize Christine. But then she did, and she smiled.
I was so glad just to see her again and that she was, everything was all right. And we were all right together, the two of us. Yeah.
Christine's next big step was still uncertain. Her options for permanent housing depended partly on how helpless LA County deemed her to be. With more demand for affordable housing than supply, the system works like an overcrowded emergency room, where doctors treat life-threatening injuries before minor ones. So if you're homeless in LA, the older you are, the sicker you are, the more housing assistance you can get, which on the one hand totally makes sense. And on the other, it's ironic that what was working in Christine's favor was her bad heart, her depression, conditions made worse by her years of homelessness. It's easy to say, well, when Christine was younger, healthier, she could have just gotten a job, fended better for herself. But that's also a bit like saying, well, she could have just had a different life history, different skills, a different brain.
We have a language problem there. We haven't developed a non-pejorative vocabulary for being needy or dependent or recognizing some people will need a lot of help.
Sam Sembaris is a psychologist and president of Pathways Housing First, an organization that works around the country to house and treat the chronically homeless. Sam says that while creating more safe, affordable housing costs money, living with such scarcity also comes with costs.
When I teach an undergraduate class and you ask people, because now homeless has been around 30 years, so these kids have grown up, you know, with homelessness, and their first memories of encounters with homeless people is usually they're walking with their parents and they see someone very distressing for them, and the parents are saying, don't look, look the other way. And we are learning, one generation now after the other, to cut off our spontaneous human reaction to seeing people suffering on the street and teaching our kids to walk past them. That's something awful that's happening to all of us that we're able to do that. I think that often doesn't get talked about, but it's costing our sense of community and our sense of humanity, and there's a cost.
Not everybody learns to look away.
Everything that breathes has a soul. You just can't throw people around like they're of no value. I don't care at what point they are in their life. You just can't do that.
Christine's best friend, Kim.
And if we each, just a little bit, looked out for the next person, just a little. Just think of one neighborhood, one block said, okay, we're going to take care of these people who are out over a neighborhood. We're going to make sure they have food for the week. Just one block. Just think about how that could work. Just think. And it doesn't take a whole lot.
Kim had a vision of Christine getting her very own apartment. She imagined going to visit there.
Oh, we've talked about it. I'm like, you know, because I'm the chef. Yeah, but no, I'm going to sit at the table and direct you. You're going to cook. We're going to talk, turn on the news, CNN. And, oh, yeah, we've talked about it. That's my prayer for her, to have a key to a nice little single safe apartment. Safe. She can have one cat. I can go there and still look after it. That's all she needs.
The first house Christine remembers living in, her childhood home, is a few blocks from the shelter she moved into.
I can't believe that's the original door. It is.
It still looked a lot like Christine remembered, a one-story house with French doors in the front. By our feet, on the sidewalk, there was some writing etched into the concrete.
SCC 1975.
Christine's initials. She put them there when she was about 16 years old. In those days, she styled her hair in long, blonde, feathered waves. On the same sidewalk, maybe a foot away from Christine's initials, somebody had written her last name, Curtis, in big capital letters.
And your dad put that in?
Yep.
At least 50 years ago. Could be longer, but at least. Yeah, it used to go in real, real deep, but you know, yeah. It's worn off from the rain and the wind and just in general.
She looked back up at the house. She said she was glad it was still there.
Because they could have torn it down, you know. Yeah. Oh, well. We were here. That's all that matters.
The house was just this box made of wood and stucco and glass, with some stranger's car in the driveway and a swing for some family's kid hanging off a tree out front. But it was also proof of this other life Christine once had, a life of comfort, safety, family, when she had what she was hoping to find again, a home. Christine stayed at the shelter for more than 6 months. When the coronavirus pandemic hit, she was moved to her own room in a nearby hotel to protect her from being exposed. She's still there, but last month, a little more than a year after my father-in-law requested help for her from LA County, Christine was matched to a subsidized apartment in Koreatown. When she does get there, Christine hopes to eventually adopt a cat. This series was produced, reported, and written by me, Anna Scott. Edited by Sonia Geis. Mixed by Lyra Smith and Ray Guarna. Music from First Com. Special thanks to Madeline Brand, Sarah Sweeney, and Christian Bordahl.